Jema. This is a line of Sri Aurobindo in Savitri. Our life is a paradox with God for key. So this line came to me as we, in our continuing series on collected works of the mother, we are going to enter into volume 10. And volume 10 is basically mother's commentaries on thoughts and aphorisms. So what has this line got to do with thoughts and aphorisms? Well, if we look at thoughts and aphorisms, it takes up the paradoxes and seemingly irreconcilable opposites. And Sri Aurobindo does magic on it. That's what you'll see. So there are plenty of paradoxes which are there in human life. And most of us just live with them. We don't even try to reconcile them. We have slots here. There is this paradox, this theory, and this one. And the beautiful word we use for this is adjustment. So we adjust. But we never really try to resolve. Even it goes to that extent where it is considered that there can be no reconciliation. That's how the division between world and God came into being. You cannot reconcile. This is this, that is that. Tadeva brahmantvam vidhi nedam yadidam upasate. And yet, the mother says that we have entered an age where this and this, not this and that. So that's why mankind is facing the challenge of all these paradoxes. And if in our life we are confronted with paradoxes at every level, it's a good sign. It's a sign that divine is pushing us to find the key. And just to complete, the beauty of these paradoxes, there is no permanent way you can resolve them unless you get the divine key. For example, when you are having people with whom, you know, always people problems is the then ultimately the only way to permanently resolve this issue is to see the divine in them. There is no second shortcut way. You'll be compelled or to give up. Give up is the easier part. But to see the divine in them, which is so difficult, and yet the paradoxes challenge us, stimulate us. First the divine presence, and then why the divine has become or wearing this mask, either bright and beautiful or dark and resplendent, the mask of terror or the mask of love, the smile that saves or the smile that slays. So all these various masks, then one begins to understand that, as Sri Aurobindo says, the smile that sanctions the game. What a game. Game of struggle and game of not thrones, but game of thorns. So these are the paradoxes. And in thoughts and aphorism, we find ultimately they're so beautiful, just meditating upon them opens doors. And the mother says they were written 1913 onwards, we see most of these thoughts and aphorisms. And the mother says, it seems to me they were written when Sri Aurobindo was moving from the intuitive mind to the super mind, piercing as it were a hole. Because all reconciliations can ultimately take place only in the super mind. Super mind is the home of reconciling opposites. It is the original home of unity. Short of that, there will always be some gap, some division somewhere. And as mother says, all division in consciousness is an insincerity. So this is the importance of these wonderful thoughts and aphorisms. And mother would say that, you know, people when they read it, they couldn't understand. And they would often wonder because it hits hard at many of our conventional notions. Every possible notion, Sri Aurobindo smashes it and then takes it to another level and reconciles. So personally, it's been one of my favorites. And the other beautiful thing about this book is mother's commentary, that you have a combined Sri Aurobindo and the mother. Other places also mother has commented on Sri Aurobindo's works. But here we see one thought and aphorism, then there is a commentary. And there is a history of these commentaries. So, as we know, 58 is the last period when mother went to the playground. After that, she did not participate much in the activities. If you see, just for main playground thing is 50 December, if you take 51 to 58. And before that, she used to go to the playground to prepare it. But otherwise, in between, it's a very different, I mean, what we normally know about her dynamic side when she came to playground. And then she withdrew. But questions were put to her. The questions were put to her by various people. 1 to 12 are primarily questions which were put to her in writing, and she commented, or oral, and she commented. Then from 12 to 65, there was one particular sadhika who kept on asking her, and she kept on commenting on them. And that sadhika, many of us know, is Taradi. There's a little humorous aside to that. She was once sharing with me. My father once asked me, "Are you the only stupid girl who is asking so many questions?" As if others, 75% of the questions are her. Manojda has also asked quite a few of them. But thanks to all of them that, well, today we have these. And then from 65 onwards, most of them, we see that the mother is not giving any elaborate commentaries. She is taking number of aphorisms and giving, because she was so much deep into the yoga of the cells. So this is how it is arranged, as aphorisms on jnana, karma, bhakti, but one need not see it that way, because each is a, I think this should be seen with a very unconditioned, as far as possible, without prejudices, opinions. Then they open up doors of experience. So this is the brief background. Let's not hold ourselves back and enter into these aphorisms straight away. So one of them is, there are plenty, and each is a marvel. So I'm just picking up, I've just marked a few randomly. So there is one of them. I'm not reading the aphorism, because what follows after a conversation is something which is quite independent of it, but very revealing. Very often we'll see mother, there is a statement used to be there on the notice board, I don't know whether it's still there or not, where the mother has said, if you cannot speak well of something going on in the ashram, remain silent. And then she says, this silence is a it's a help to the divine work. Because we don't understand many things. We don't understand anything. It's always good to take it like that. So she says something very interesting. And this, personally to me, it's such a help in human life, and in particularly in relationship. When something, this on page 21, when something in a person seems to you completely unacceptable or ridiculous, inverted commas, what? He is like that? He behaves like that? He says things like that? He does things like that? All of us go through these. You should say to yourself, Well, but perhaps I do the same thing without being aware of it. I would do better to look into myself first before criticizing him, so as to make sure that I am not doing the very same thing in a slightly different way. Recently, with all these incidents, horror which took place in Kolkata. So, but if we really look closely, how many men are there who don't look upon women as an object of pleasure sometime or the other? And if there is a vibration of that in anyone, knowingly, unknowingly, watching the movies, watching certain scenes, watching certain songs, we are actually participant of this tendency. There it is manifest like a symptom. If you look at the collective mankind as a body, one body, then each cell and the vibration is ultimately throwing up. All the hit movies, which we call as 300 crores or 1000 crores. What are these movies? And invariably we are somewhere supporting a certain attitude towards women. And it all ultimately multiplies. It takes an extreme form, as you know, of course, like an abscess which bursts. But if you look behind, you'll see many things. So this is always such a beautiful thing to remind ourselves, that if I am seeing something in other, I am carrying the same tendency. Once a person came to mother and asked, mother, in my office I see people doing dishonesty and all that. What is the solution? Mother remained quiet and said, you should look whether you have dishonesty within yourself. He was completely shocked. And then the mother gave her own examples. She said, if in the ashram somebody has some difficulty, then I go within to see where is that imperfection within me. The Divine Mother's example. And then we understand the deeper sense of all the avatars say this. See, when Christ says, if you want to pelt stone, be sure that you don't have a vibration of that kind within you. And for us, we have to catch it from the roots. There are others who will do what they have to do. But for us, the work is far more difficult. If you have the good sense and intelligence to do this each time, you are shocked by another person's behavior. You will realize that in life, your relations with others are like a mirror, which is presented to you so that you can see more easily and clearly the weaknesses you carry within you. So lucky we are when we are surrounded by people who are criticizing us or whom we don't like. Probably we need to look inside. Kabir, the great mystic, has said that. He says that, Bura jo dekhan mein chala mujhse bura na koi. So at another place, Shobhina says, there is no sin in the world which is not my sin. So these are aphorisms which suddenly trigger, open a door. Because you go to the root and then you realize that sin is born out of selfishness. And if ignorance, it's resultant. If there is a trace of it in any part, so there is a proclivity. And that's why Shobhinda speaks of perfect perfection right up to the body cells, the transformation. Because he's not satisfied with, you leave one corner which is dark, it is enough to breed something which is dangerous. In a general and almost absolute way, anything that shocks you in other people is the very thing you carry in yourself in a more or less veiled, more or less hidden form, though perhaps in a slightly different guise, which allows you to delude yourself. And what in yourself seems inoffensive enough becomes monstrous as soon as you see it in others. It's a force multiplier. That's why we feel disgust and that anger, and we don't want to see it. But it's there. As I said, I gave that example of the recent incidents. All these things are there. People often say, oh, these politicians are corrupt. Hold on. Yes, they are. But look inside. If we get an easy way to do things, don't we? Or even if we don't do it, don't we feel unhappy that there are dishonest people who can get their way done by this? Why are you feeling unhappy about it? You have chosen a way of life. Stand by it. So, it will be there, but in a veiled way. And if you really look at dishonesty in its real sense, hardly anybody will be able to stand the test. Try to experience this. It will greatly help you to change yourselves. At the same time, it will bring a sunny tolerance to your relationships with others. This is the key she is giving. The goodwill which comes from understanding, and it will very often put an end to these completely useless quarrels. Once a very elderly sadhak, a very good friend, and somebody brought to his notice something about someone long back, decades back. And he made a remark very different. Not a remark that we should forgive or forget anything. He made a remark that if I look closely at myself, I see something of that tendency in me also. Now, when I heard it, it was an eye-opener. I said, here is a man who is really engaged in yoga. He didn't say we should forgive, assuming a superior position, or try to cover up, saying, no, it is nothing. He looked inside and made this remark, which is something amazing. And then she gives us a mantra. See, all this without any money, otherwise people go to psychiatrists, so many sessions, or they pay up, sign up for courses. I think we should conduct a course, how to live without quarreling. The standard answer is don't speak. If you speak, there is quarrel. But it's not true. So she says, one can live without quarreling. I think it should be written in houses everywhere. One can live without quarreling. It seems strange to say this. For the Divine Mother, what is finding? She is finding strange. Then why people quarrel? Most of the quarrel, almost all the quarrels are for petty things. When first time I had read this in Sri Aurobindo's letters on yoga, I said, yeah, that's true. Little things. It's not about Iran's nuclear policy, okay? It's about the storm in the teacup. And it blows up, literally. So she says, it would seem on the contrary that life is made for quarreling, in the sense that the main occupation of people who are together is to quarrel, overtly or covertly. Covertly is at jana, move banana, at least smile. No? So overtly or covertly. You do not always come to words. You do not always come to blows, fortunately. But you are in a state of perpetual irritation within, because you do not find around you the perfection that you would yourself wish to realize. You want others to be. You see, that's why people often ask why love marriages fail. Well, they fail because it's the same expectation. It's not some new expectation. Mr. or Mrs. A god or a goddess. Too difficult to fit in that bill. So you begin to realize whether it's arranged or love, it doesn't matter. Human nature is human nature. So you begin to realize that, well, there are defects, there are problems. Unconditional acceptance, compassion, understanding, sacrifice, that is a very rare quality in human nature. If one can have that, yes. So she says, and which you find rather difficult to realize, but you find it entirely natural that others should realize it. So we keep finding faults until we discover that, oh my God, it's all within me. How can they be like that? You forget how difficult you find it in yourself not to be like that. Try, you will see. Then she says, look upon everything with a benevolent smile. Now you can't change others. Even this, people will read it and then tell somebody else, see, you should practice it. No, it's meant for us. Human mind's capacity of deception. Somebody gets very angry, and if you are so-called practicing yoga, both are practicing on the path, huh? And if the other person responds with anger, so thus, first remark is, you practice equanimity. So if you say that, you should also not get angry. I am not angry. It just, I am speaking normally. There is no anger inside now. Their human mind has, what I have realized, endless capacity of deception. And as long as it deceives others, it's still okay. Someday they'll realize. But deceiving oneself, it really believes that, no, I am fine. So she says, look upon everything with a benevolent smile. After all, that's why you see that song became a big hit. Why this kolavari? became big hit, only that one. So I asked them, wow, what is the meaning of this song? I asked my Tamil friend. He like, why all this, you know, jagda, this, all this, why are you? I said, then I understand why it became a hit. Because actually, if you look at it, so stupid. So she said, look upon everything with a benevolent smile. Take all the things which irritate you as a lesson for yourself, not for others. As a lesson for yourself, and your life will be more peaceful and more effective as well. For a great percentage of your energy subtly goes to waste in the irritation you feel when you do not find in others the perfection that you would like to realize in yourself. So that's why we should not waste energy. We should look within, am I carrying this tendency? If you find it, correct it. If you don't find it, forget about it. But don't, you know, increase the storm. You stop short at the perfection that others should realize, and you are seldom conscious of the goal you should be pursuing yourself. See again, see what level she is taking us. Don't forget your goal. Even if others are fighting, quarreling, are you here for that? That's what she is reminding us. If you are conscious of it, well then, begin with the work which is given to you. That is to say, realize what you have to do and do not concern yourself with what others do. At one place, Mother has written in so many words that it is very good to remember the old saying, mind your own business. And there are people who go and say that, but I don't have any business. No, business is not in that sense. All kinds of things. So there was a person who was passing a sadhak's room and saw something. The door was a little open. And he saw something. Not very pleasant, whatever it is. So he went and reported to the mother. Mother, I saw this. Mother said, you have seen it? Okay, now you forget about it. End of the story. I know everything. He knows everything. You can't fool the divine. And the best way to the true attitude is simply to say, all those around me, all, they see people often nowadays, this WhatsApp gyan comes, know that all the relations in your life, all the is with a purpose. So the next question, but what is the purpose? Tell me, no? Okay, so here is the purpose, if you like. All those around me, all the circumstances of my life, all the people near me are a mirror. This is the purpose. What I cannot see in myself, they are showing me. Even circumstances, he says, they are a clumsy way of expressing what's going on inside. Don't try to change these things, change yourself inside. Are a mirror held up to me by the divine consciousness to show me the progress I must make. Everything that shocks me in others means a work I have to do in myself. And perhaps if one carried true perfection in oneself, one would discover it more often in others. If you really discovered something beautiful inside, you'll probably see those tendencies which otherwise we don't see. These are very beautiful, associated with this, and it is almost connected. So here the mother says, this is page 74, the aphorism. To hate the sinner is the worst sin. So sin is, maybe if you take it as bad, then to hate the sinner is the worst sin. For it is hating God. Yet he who commits it glories in his superior virtue. This is very easy to understand. So whenever people criticize somebody, so after all, who made the person? Actually, it's like you're criticizing a painting. So ultimately, whom are you criticizing? Not the painting, the painter. So that Shravita has already said, man, my painting is not yet over as far as human beings are concerned. So I'm still painting, hold on. So that's to understand that why things are the way they are. But when we criticize, say the ashram, world, people, then ultimately I am criticizing the creator. Because it is he who has brought out this world. What the attitude should be, I don't understand. I see these things and I don't understand. But there must be a wisdom. I need to know. That's why people have gone in search of truth. I want to understand truth. What is this world? Why are we the way? And then that following that trail they arrive. And then they have their own conclusions. That's a different thing altogether. So the disciple says something very interesting. He says not to hate the sinner is not so difficult. But not to hate the virtuous is much more difficult. It is true. These people who are very self-righteous. I am good. Sometimes you feel by TK, put a little bit of defect inside yourself, you look more healthy. I mean, trying to paint like a sadhu bachcha and you know, extremely nice and you wonder what is hidden inside. You know, painting yourself like a yogi or a sannyasi or saint. That's why sannyasis are so dangerous. Because, you know, what they carry inside you don't know. And mother has spoken about it. Their influence can be very dangerous. Because they are putting up a robe. And now outwardly they have to conform to that. But inside it's the same human nature. By putting on a robe or changing your name, you don't become someone different. I was going to say, burka pehenne se hakikat thodi badlegi. But I mean, it applies to the same thing. That ultimately you don't change your inside. So he says, it is easy to understand a sinner. He is a weak fellow, whatever it is. It is easy to understand a poor wretch, but the virtuous. So disciple is asking this. And then the mother says, but in reality, what you hate in them is their complacency. It is only that. Because after all, they are right not to do evil. You cannot blame them for that. But because of that, they think themselves superior. This is the problem. If God has put you here, it's because you have been fortunate. His grace is there. Best is to remember that. He should actually make you more humble because you have passed through the stages. Nobody can reach without going through the stages. All people who reach a point, they are very humble, very benevolent. It's a sign that person has done work upon himself or mother has worked upon himself. But there are people who have not done any work or nothing has happened. They are the very self-righteous. Oh, how come this person is doing this? But if mother has worked upon you, you become more and more benevolent because you realize. So, then mother says something very interesting as an example. Take for example, a person who has friends, whose friends are very fond of her because they have special capacities. They see special capacities in her because it is pleasant to be in her company. One can always learn from her. So about some lady in the ashram, she is saying. Then all of a sudden, by a concurrence of circumstances, this person is shunned by society because she has been with another man or because she is living with someone else without being officially married. In short, because of all these social things which have no value in themselves. Mother's words, not mine. And all her friends, because why is she saying no value in themselves? Because you are concealing, see, most of the, I'm being on this side of the fence, and of course, I'm sure, Rupalia, all these psychologists, psychiatrists, they experience that what human life is behind the scenes. You get an access to that, and you realize that what facade people carry. Often when people come and say, oh, you know, how come somebody's married life is so happy. So I tell them, have you met them? Do you know them personally? Yeah, they always seem very smiling at party. I said, yes. In party, everybody smiles. Go to their home and live for 24 hours. And you'll realize, because human nature is the same. Or they will be like upstairs, downstairs. That is also okay. Let's have our spaces. But this is why, you know, the facade that people carry. But they don't see that aspect of love. That's why she is explaining it. And all her friends, I'm not speaking of those who truly loved her all her acquaintances, all those who received her kindly, who welcomed her and greeted her with a warm smile when they met her on the street, in the street, now turn their heads the other way and walk right past her without a glance. This is a mother's equivalent of Christ's story. And Sri Krishna's equivalent of Sri Krishna's Kubja. And Sri Rama's equivalent of Ahilya. Every avatar comes and teaches. And Buddha's equivalent of Angulimal. All of them come and say this. It's not like, and we keep on perpetuating it in the name of social order. But, you know, it's a falsehood and a facade. So she's saying, be truthful and honest. So she says, this has happened even here in the ashram. People would be shocked about what happening. Oh, she had friend. No, mother is saying people are reacting to her like that. That's what she is shocked about. I do not want to give any details. But anyway, several times something happened which contravened accepted social laws and people who had shown so much affection and sympathy. Oh, they would sometimes say, this person is lost. When such things happen in the world at large, I find it quite natural. But when it happens here, I always get a little shock in the sense that I say to myself, well, they haven't gone beyond that. She doesn't stop here, okay? Even people who profess to be broad-minded, to be above all these conventions, fall straight into the trap. Immediately, then to protect their conscience, they say, mother does not allow it. I have often given this page, you know, as a quote when people say, because they quote it. Mother does not allow it. Mother does not permit it. Mother does not tolerate it. Adding one more stupidity to all the others. And then she says, after a passage, she says it is narrow-mindedness. Because a person with a little intelligence is not going to be caught out by something like that. Then she says, it is an elementary stage, this wideness. Until you come out of this state, you are unfit for yoga. They are her words. See, not even something very strong. Actually, this is supported by the entire thing. Of course, we don't need to support. But Sri Aurobindo, when he speaks about standards of conduct and spiritual freedom, he says, first step is when we are conducted by like a loner who is up my desire, like an animal, whatever I want, I'll do. Then comes the social stage. All the moral laws and social laws. Then comes the third stage, where you begin to individually make your choices. Then comes the fourth, where the spiritual freedom begins. So if you are still at the social stage of evolution, one is not ready for the next stage. So she says, because truly you are not ready for yoga when you are in that state. It is a rudimentary state. So there are plenty of aphorisms like that about righteous wrath and this and that. Okay, so so he takes a very interesting dig at, there is another one which we can read. Okay. So these, there are some series which will go one after another. They are like Isha Upanishad, you see two or three, they go together. So I'll just read one of them. God had opened my eyes, for I saw the nobility of the vulgar, the attractiveness of the repellent, the perfection of the maimed, and the beauty of the hideous. I would love to probably, but let me hold back. He continues. Another one. Forgiveness is praised by the Christian and the Vaishnav. But for me, I ask, what have I to forgive and whom? Then he continues. And this is where the ultimate sense of humor comes. God struck me with a human hand. Shall I say then, I pardon thee thy insolence, O God? God gave me good in a blow. Shall I say, I forgive thee, O Almighty One, the harm and the cruelty, but do it not again. See, there is so much humor, and that repeatedly Sri Aurobindo says that mother describes God as a sense of humor. So the mother explains, these two aphorisms are illustrations of the affirmation of the divine presence in all things and all beings. Something is there good in everybody. You'll see that even in the most deadliest criminal. And I'm saying this because I've literally tried to see, and you'll see a good quality. It's right there. Only thing is, it's in somebody else's hands or whatever. And they also develop the idea, which has already been touched on, that there is nothing and no one to forgive, since the divine is the originator of all things. This is how this sentence, God struck me with a human hand, should be read and understood. But again, so it should not be used to derive, oh, so I should just bare my second cheek and all. No, he's not saying that. He's saying in your heart there should be no hatred, no reaction of that kind, which is what the Gita also says. Then act according to the dharma and the divine will. But without all this idea, even in forgiving, I am superior, or in striking out of hatred. So he is clearing our inner state. Because there are other aphorisms where he speaks about that. For instance, on one place he speaks about righteous wrath, and then equally he says that one who does not take to violence when God bids him, exact words may be missing, does to the world an incalculable harm. So both things are there. One is righteous wrath. I am right, I am superior, and how come sinner and all that. The other is when there are conditions, there are situations when you have to be God's Sudarshan Chakra or the bow and arrow. You should not deny that also. And then he says, when I pine at misfortune and call it evil, or am jealous and disappointed, then I know that there is awake in me again the eternal fool. Now, you see, all of them have mother's wonderful commentaries, but I'm just skip. I'll read some of the commentaries. When I see others suffer, I feel that I am unfortunate, but the wisdom that is not mine sees the good that is coming and approves. Why there is suffering? So the disciple asks, what is this wisdom? And mother says, it is the supreme wisdom, the wisdom of the supreme. By this wisdom, the present, the past, and the future are all seen equally. It knows the causes of all effects and the effects of all causes, the sum total of all circumstances perceived simultaneously in their entirety, is seen by it as nature's sublime effort to express the divine progressively, her ascending march towards divine perfection. That is the good that is coming. So this is where she, first Sri Aurobindo shocks our mind, all the fuses go away, and then the mother enters and makes it wide and vast. So plenty of them, I'll just read one more today, let's see. Yeah. Everything she says, people ask, war and supermind, misfortune as a blessing. Now, one of them I'll read, because this is what is people often speak about, evil and suffering and what we can do about it. But before that, few more such very interesting aphorisms before I touch that. Shobindu writes, and this is own experience as I know, when I was asleep in the ignorance, I came to a place of meditation full of holy men, and I found their company wearisome and the place a prison. When I awoke, God took me to a prison and turned it into a place of meditation and his trysting ground. Beautiful, this is his own experience. And there Shri Krishna tells him, all these people whom in your pride you call chote log, look, I am going to raise these. When I read a wearisome book through and with pleasure, yet perceived all the perfection of its wearisomeness, then I knew that my mind was conquered. This experience I had with Charles Dickens. I'm sorry, there are people who love him. And I read, I kept reading and wondering why this book is so boring. And I kept reading. Because you want to finish it. Some people like him very much. At the end, I was analyzing, long, long back before turning to yoga, why did I find the book so boring? And then I got my answer. Everything is moving at a characteristically slow pace. There is nothing really happening. It is like the mundane life. But yes, it is a perfection that, you know, like there's a movie like that. You wonder what is going to happen, what is going to come. And at the end, you just say, it's about everyday life of mine. I don't know, there was a movie like that, Meethi Meethi Baatein or something like that. I've forgotten. And it was such a wearisome movie. Not Amol Palekar, I remember the name. And you just wonder what's happening. You're waiting for something to happen. But nothing is happening. Two people come, get together, they, you know, talk nicely, sweetly. Some little challenge, ghar dhund rahe. Then finally they get married. So it's okay. So she says, it brings its own joy. I knew my mind to be conquered when it admired the beauty of the hideous, yet felt perfectly why other men shrank back or hated. So both simultaneous. It's not like, oh, you did not realize the beauty in it. Simultaneously. What does the beauty of the hideous mean? It is always the same realization presented from different angles, expressed through various experiences. The realization that everything is a manifestation of the Supreme, the Eternal, the Infinite. That's why in Tantra you have to do that ultimate practice. That you have to learn not to shrink from anything. And final practice is supposed to be to eat human meat. Symbolically, of course. So Sri Ramakrishna had this difficulty. And then he finally takes Bhishta and says, this also, human excreta is also part of, you know, human. So you see this shrinking, the divine presence is in everything. And to shrink, so many things we shrink. That is why, by conquering our mind and its ignorant and false perceptions, we can, through all things, enter into contact with this Supreme Truth. So we have to practice this conquering of the mind's reaction. It doesn't mean we have to land up in that. But we have to learn to conquer the mind's reactions. This is one of the basic practices. And then see how he is reconciling us. To feel and love the God of beauty and good in the ugly and the evil. Whom? God of beauty. And still yearn in utter love to heal it of its ugliness and its evil. This is real virtue and morality. You are not hating. You are seeing that here too God of beauty is struggling to express himself. Manifest himself. As if he is fighting. And the outer consciousness is reacting very badly. And you see that God of beauty inside the ugly and the hideous. And then you want to participate in the manifestation. That's why Shobindu says in Essays on the Gita, slaying these Dhritarashtrians is even towards them a grace, because they are also suffering in this consciousness which has become so small, narrow, full of ambition. So even releasing them is a kind of grace. That Shubhendu reveals in Essays on the Gita. And then comes this question. How can one help to cure evil and ugliness? You may say that there is a kind of hierarchy of collaboration or action. There is a negative help and a positive help. This is something which is very relevant in today's time, we all face it. To begin with, there is a way that might be called negative, the way provided by Buddhism and kindred religions not to see, first of all, to be in such a state of purity and beauty that you do not perceive ugliness and evil. It is like something that does not touch you because it does not exist in you. And that's how we can understand how Valmiki Ratnakar turns into Valmiki, Angulimal turns into Anand, because those who were there, they didn't perceive that part at all. They just saw that divine, and now we don't have that, you know, a person who has committed, let's say, goriest of crime. If you were to confront and ask, but you have to have that consciousness. So human society right now is very far from that. That is the perfection of the negative method. It is quite elementary, never to notice evil, never to speak of the evil in others, not to perpetuate these vibrations by observation, by criticism, by insistence on what is bad. See, this is so important, because other day somebody had sent me some video somewhere. You keep circulating that, you know, Sanatana Dharma is in danger and, you know, this what is going to happen. I said, if you keep forwarding these vibrations, you are actually filling the mind with a lot of fear, and it's not good, because Sanatana Dharma is towards vastness. Yes, there are people whom you need to counter, but by doing this, because most people will do nothing except they'll just fill their heart with rage and hate. That's all they will do. They can't do anything more than that, and that's going to even pollute and affect the whole mental world. So ultimately, see how falsehood acts. And quite some time back, I had observed this, how falsehood plays this double game. It's like supposing you commit something which is an error, you make a mistake, and you realize, you move on. But then what it does, it's not over. It says, hold on, hold on. You're supposed to feel guilty, aren't you? Okay. That in Savitri, that complete night in the toward the black void, we see that death in that ultimate darkness. He asks her to atone for sins she has never committed. Guilt comes. That's why Mother said guilt belongs to the past world. It has no place in yoga. Meaning there, why I can do anything? No, that's not what. But learn and grow. Learn and grow. Learn and grow. Progress. But guilt. Then if you have felt, okay, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. No, no, no. You're supposed to be depressed. It's not a mistake. See, you have done this. So it takes you towards that. That's why you see attack of hostile forces which make people depressed. Invariably at some stage when the depression becomes thick, they suffer from guilt feelings. Macbeth and, you know, all these. Because it's the projection of these forces. So the mother says that this is an elementary stage. This barely touches the problem. This is only that, okay, you can walk through life in that way. Yet it should be a general rule. But people who criticize have an answer for that. They say, if you do not see the evil, you will never be able to cure it. This is the standard argument. If you leave someone in the ugliness, he will never get out of it. Mother says this is not true, but that is how they justify their behavior. So in this aphorism, Sri Aurobindo forestalls these objections. It is not because of ignorance or unconsciousness or indifference that you do not see the evil. You are quite capable of seeing it. It's not like a blindness. You are quite capable of seeing it. Even of feeling it. But you refuse to help to spread it by giving it the force of your attention and the support of your consciousness. So even within us, if we keep paying attention to some part which is dark, it keeps on increasing. Darkness doesn't become less by not noticing it. By noticing it, it becomes more and more, more frightening. So this, she's still speaking of the hierarchy. So that's the first step. You must be able to see the evil or the ugliness without suffering from it. That's where first step. Master the heart, master the emotions. Don't let your mind start jumping, rushing, running, WhatsApping, forwarding. Stay quiet. See it. Without being shocked or disturbed by it. You see it from a height where these things do not exist. But you have the conscious perception of it. You are not affected by it. You are free. This is the first step. So this is the first step. It's not like you don't see it. It's there, but you're not affected by it. The second step is to be positively conscious of the supreme good and supreme beauty behind all things. Never to lose this faith. This thought that India will one day be finished, Sanatana Dharma will be finished, is a most dangerous thought which circulates. Regardless of whatever logic you may use, this thought is not to be circulated. Much worse have come. India has withstood, the only country which has withstood all the invasions. This doesn't mean we should be asleep, but not this way that, you know, rebel rousing. So, the second step is to be positive. When you see him, you are able to perceive him behind this mask and this distortion. Even this ugliness, this wickedness, this evil is a disguise of something which is essentially beautiful or good, luminous, pure. Then comes the true collaboration. So there is the second part. One is that you see the evil, but don't let yourself be affected. Then you compel yourself that here too the divine is there. Push your will, strain your faith. At least take it like an assumption that Mother and Sri Aurobindo have said divine is there even in this. Then, for when you have this vision, this perception, when you live in this consciousness, it also gives you the power to draw that down into the manifestation to the earth and to bring it with a capital I into contact with what now distorts and disguises. So that little by little this distortion and this disguise are transformed by the influence of the truth that is behind. So, ordinary reaction is, world is so bad, evil, horrible, and see, there's no hope. This, you're not helping. You're making it worse. You're perpetuating. You're part of the problem. Second step, the real thing begins. When I stop getting affected by the evil around, I see there is evil. It's not that I close my eyes. I'm not an ostrich. You see there is evil, but it stops affecting you. Your heartstrings are freed and given to God. Your mind is freed and given to God. Your vital impulse reactions, nervous reactions are freed and given to God. So you're inwardly still. So this is the first real step. Then the next step is compel yourself to see the divine. Of course, seeing with these eyes is much later. At least start with the trust, faith, that this too is a mask of God. This too is a mask of God. This too, mask. Some masks are good, some masks are terrible, but there is divine. So you have to, this has to continue in the mind, like how Sri Aurobindo meditated upon this verse, Sarva khalvidam brahman, yastu sarvani bhutani, atme atmane vanupashyata. So you have to meditate on this. And Sri Aurobindo says, even if your heart bleeds, meditate on this. This too is God, this too is God. There is God behind, not that outer thing is God, but this is the divine presence, the all beautiful Krishna even here. He is the smiling one behind. So this is the second step. Now she says, if you do it, you will start drawing these forces in the atmosphere. Look at the science and the psychology behind it. You are in the presence of someone and you are constantly seeing evil. So what is happening? You may not say a word, but there is a reaction going on. But you are in the presence of somebody who is evil and you are invoking Krishna. Mother's love. Now imagine, whatever you believe in, Krishna or Divine Mother is with you, standing in front of him. You are just a teeny weeny, small little whatever. Now you see, what are the possibilities? What can happen? And what you can say cannot happen. You can't fix a limit to the divine action. What may happen without your knowing anything, probably without speaking a word? Just looking at someone full of evil which you perceive, but invoking the divine presence, even wishing for him. I've shared this experience of mine with someone with whom I tried to make life hell, and then one day I saw him near the samadhi. He was even barred from entering. He used to create nuisance. And then I told Hari, I didn't know you have love for mother. So he says, who else is there to love? I said, this man? Means if you look at the defects of the man, I can't even recount them. So it was an eye-opener for me. I said, thank you, mother, you brought this man into my life. And then everything got dissolved. So you see, this is where we are calling in the manifestation the divine presence. Some people have to do this. This is a more difficult work. And very few are there who can do it. So while everything has its place, it's not like we have to go stop, convert people. That is Gita cautions. Nabuddhi Vedam. The knower should not try to delude those who do not know. They have to go through that process, through the egoism, through rajas, through lifting a sword, and it's okay. That is a level of everything has its place. But for you who was called to the path, the action should be highest. Because very few can do it. That's why Mother says, we are here to do what others cannot do. Because they don't know how to do it. So this is what she is explaining. She is not saying, go and start now proselytizing others. That no, you shouldn't do this. And you have to stop. This is what, Gandhiji turned non-violence into a gospel of the nation. You're not supposed to do it. Because each thing has its own place. So she says, that is true. But this is not the end. She says something further. Because in the aphorism, he mentions, to feel and love is not enough to see the divine presence. So the mother goes to that next level. She says there are two levels at which you, as far as evil is concerned, you see that love is obviously the most potent and integral of all powers. Integral in the sense that it applies in all cases. Of course, not human love. It's understood. Human love is full of weaknesses. It is even more powerful than the power of purification, which dissolves all bad will and which is, as it were, the master of the adverse forces. That's what Maheshwari's power is. Power of purification. That white light, as the mother would put it, which purifies. That knowledge which liberates. Once it comes, it's like things vanish without knowing. Her action is like that. Mahakali's through a blow. Mahalakshmi, you won't even realize. You're going through your weaknesses and one day you are out of it and you wonder, are they that joker? Yes. Because Mahalakshmi's love is like that, charming. Mahasaraswati will not leave you till she says, no, this. So she will ultimately, that last trace, like tracing a line on water and then it will vanish. This is how all four of them, Divine Mother's work. So purification, but that Supreme Mother, how she works. So that is love. It destroys one form. The power of purification first dissolves in order to allow the transformation out afterwards. It destroys one form in order to be able to create a better one. Whereas love need not dissolve in order to transform. It possesses the direct power of transformation. Love is like a flame that changes what is hard into something malleable and even sublimates this malleable thing into a kind of purified vapor. It does not destroy, it transforms. And people still don't understand. You know, somebody writes, you know, Krishna came with this weapon and Rama came with this weapon. So I wrote, Sri Aurobindo came with the weapon called pen. Are bhai. He could have used anybody's hand and pen. See in his writings, there is compassion. For whom is he writing 35 volumes? Page after page to the dim children of earth were given, knowing well that we won't read. He came armed with boundless compassion and the mother with boundless love. This is the weapon they have brought. Now bolo, which asura can resist ultimately? And that's why the Durga surrender. Because in front of Durga, the moment they saw Durga, they would run away. Maragi, she is going to finish us. So they won't come near mother. So she taught her, look, stay quiet. Then there is that experience where Durga was seated quietly and somebody came who was an asura. But all devotees type, you know. So mother was seeing Durga's reaction. She made no reaction. She remained calm and quiet. So after he went away, mother asked her, so you didn't do anything? He said, yes, now I have surrendered myself to the Supreme. Unless I get an impulsion from there, I don't strike. Just imagine. And it is needed. Otherwise, nobody will come. If you have that form, then, you know, it will be like one of the lady saints was an incarnation of Durga. So if a foreigner came near her, she would ask him to sit beyond and then from there. She would not just readily anybody could not come near her. Because there is a malich, that kind of thing. This time that power of love assumed a foreign form. I mean, nothing wrong with that form. But it's a form which has been used, abused by. There is a truth behind it. If you look at it, you see the differences. It's been used and abused by so many kinds of things, continues. And she assumes that form. Abhi kya kar sakte hain? You can't escape. All good and evil, all they have taken into himself. Okay. So she says, in its essence, in its origin, love is like a flame, a white flame which overcomes all resistances. You can experience this yourself. This is so true. 1000% true. Whatever the difficulty in your being, whatever the burden of accumulated error, ignorance, incapacity and bad will, a single second of this pure, essential, supreme love dissolves it as in an all-powerful flame. A single moment and a whole past can disappear. Who said karma is inevitable? A single instant in which you touch it in its essence and the whole burden is consumed. And then she says, what is the secret of the divine incarnation who embodies this love? She's talking about herself, but she's, as you know, a perfect gentle man, but she's a gentle woman in that sense. She says, and it is very easy to explain how a person who has this experience can spread it, can act on others. Anyone who has embodies mother's flame of love, he doesn't have to do all these yoga exercises, teach meditation and try and nothing. That presence is enough. He can radiate whomever she picks up. This is the power of love. Can act on others. Because to have the experience, you must touch the one supreme essence of the whole manifestation. Love is beyond manifest and unmanifest. It is beyond even that. So she says, if you touch that, means you have touched that ultimate. Or if we can say beyond the ultimate. So she says, the source and the reality of all that is. And at once you enter the realm of unity, there is no longer any separation of individuals. There is only one single vibration that can be repeated indefinitely in external form. If you rise high enough, you find yourself at the heart of all things. And what is manifest in this heart can manifest in all things. That is the great secret, the secret of the divine incarnation in an individual form. That's why the mother in this individual form. Because this form has embodied, has brought that ultimate supreme mystery, the great secret into a human body, earthly body. Otherwise difficult to climb there, rise there, and to embody it like that. So this is what she says, but at the end she says something very beautiful. With that we'll end. And when the day comes for the manifestation of supreme love, for the crystallized, concentrated descent of supreme love, that will truly be the hour of transformation, for nothing will be able to resist that. But there is only one thing. Since it is all powerful, some receptivity must be prepared on earth so that the effects are not shattering. It's so powerful. Sri Aurobindo has explained this in one of his letters. Someone asked him, why does it not come immediately? He answered something like this: if divine love had to manifest in its essence upon earth, it would be like a bombshell. Shatter all the me, mine, this, that, everything which we love. Because the earth is neither supple nor receptive enough to be able to widen itself to the dimensions of this love. The line in Savitri: love in her was wider than the universe. The whole world could take refuge in her single heart. That is the vastness. Here in her he found a vastness like his own. And she says, it not only needs to open, but to widen itself and to become more supple. Matter is still too rigid, and even the substance of the physical consciousness, not only the most material matter, but the substance of the physical consciousness is too rigid. So this is the what is going on now. Man is being prepared for divine love. Jai Ma.